This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas, powered by U-Mobile.
Good morning, this is the Breakfast Grill. I'm Keith Kam. They say one way to make it in business is to aim for the stomach, because everyone needs food. And if you're around my age, growing up in 70s KL, Lee's Frozen Food is a familiar name for those looking to stock their larders. It has been 6 decades since the company had its first retail store in Kampong Atap. Obviously, it has weathered the good and the bad economic times that fate has thrown at it. Today, 3 generations later on this show, we get to talk to Gareth Tan, Fanbee's Managing Director, to find out if this famous name can not end up being consigned to the annals of history. Welcome to the show, Gareth.
Thanks for having me, Keith.
Now, Gareth, as I was saying, I remember you guys as Lee's Frozen Food when I was growing up. How did it become Fanbee today?
Right. This is a question that I've been asked a lot over the last 6 months, right, since we initiated this rebranding exercise. Now, let me go into a bit of a history. Over the last 15 years, obviously, we have expanded beyond Malaysia into a few countries, including Vietnam and Cambodia. All right. And, you know, along the journey, we find that, you know, not the name Lee's may not be complementary in different languages. All right. So secondly, you know, we thought that, you know, we should come up with a name that's more inclusive. Mm-hmm. Right. Despite the different cultures in different countries. And that's why we agreed among ourselves that perhaps we should come up with a more up to date name. Right, that show, you know, that we are rejoining the business, even though having been in the business for 60 years.
What so, Fanbee though? What's it mean?
Actually, you know, if you look at it, you take out an E, it's actually F&B.
Oh.
So we took the F&B and we added the E and we created a new word called Fanbee, and we thought it's cool, you know, it's a reflection of, you know, post-pandemic, you know, business model. So that's why we changed it, actually.
Now, 60 years is really no mean feat for any company. You know, talk to me about how you guys weathered at least 4 global recession cycles, including the Asian financial crisis.
Right. Look, being a third generation, I don't find many counterparts that is in the same boat. Reason being is very, very simple. You know, when we started in 1962, just like most of the pioneer in industry, in any businesses, you know, first generation always tried to make life comfortable, right, for their descendants. Yeah, that's why they go into the business. And after a while, when they achieve that, then it becomes stagnant. The truth is, we became stagnant.
All right.
We became small, and nobody wanted the business.
But you guys started off as a maybe B2B.
Exactly, B2B model, exactly.
Right?
We were supplying to the who's in the market, the hotels, the restaurant, etc. And, you know, our previous generation then decided that maybe perhaps we should not scale up anymore. And so we decided to maintain that size. And obviously, when you maintain the size the way it is and people keep on growing, then you become smaller, you know. So the answer is very, very simple. The only reason why we can survive third generation is because we became smaller, we did not take risks, and then suddenly myself and my sister Adeline came back to the business, and we decided to do something different. And we did not have a lot of people, family members in the business at all. So it makes the transit quite a lot easier.
How was the transition then from scaling up from being small supplying to just hotels and the who's and who of?
We came back into the business in 2002.
Yeah.
Right? The business obviously was being ran by my mother, right? Obviously, there was a lot of resistance, just like most family business, you know, different way of thinking. So what happened was that within a year, we decided, okay, we respect the wishes of the previous generation. We decided to go overseas.
All right.
Right. So the first place that we went was Vietnam. It was pretty much to explore a business opportunity there. And from that day onwards, our mission, which is called Mission Food Equality, was born. Why did I say that? Because when I went to Vietnam, you know, and subsequently Cambodia and other countries in South Asia, I realized there was a big disparity in prices between Malaysia and the rest of South Asia. So obviously, as an entrepreneur, when you see that prices are higher in other places, you say, oh, this might be the place that I want to do business. And then we went in and dig further, what is the reason? Then there are many reasons in between, such as, you know, import regulations, as well as less competitive nature, All right. So, and then as I went into the hinterlands of Vietnam, as we started Vietnam business and we expanded it, I went to the hinterland and I look at, the lifestyle of the people. And I realized that, basically people are willing to spend on food all the time. Food give them the greatest joy ever, but why are they not available in all these hinterland, these provinces? And why are they so much more expensive? So from that day onwards, we told ourselves, okay, let's try to go to more places, especially in different regions, including in the hinterland of Malaysia, and let's try to bring down the prices.
I could make it affordable. I could be from your mom's generation, and the thought of moving from a small establishment in Kampong Atap to Vietnam, how was that conversation? How did you convince her? I'm sure there was a lot of resistance.
Actually, I did not talk to her a lot about that. It was pretty much, speaking to my grandmother.
Yeah.
Right? My grandmother has always been a very influential figure in my life since young. Yeah. She was very supportive. She said, okay, maybe you should go and do whatever you want there. So, we with a little capital, we started Vietnam with 200,000 ringgit. That's a very small capital, right? Back in 2002. Right, so within a short period of 10 years, I'm happy to say that we are among the top 10 in Vietnam right now. And then following that, we still did not come back to Malaysia because our previous generations were still active and we respect their riches. Mm-hmm. So Cambodia came calling and we saw the same disparity in prices, in affordability, right, of such a basic good in Cambodia. And then I'm glad to say that today, we have a sizable market share in Cambodia and we're doing quite well and we're expanding, and including building a warehouse. Yeah.
It's profitable in Cambodia and Vietnam.
That's right, exactly, and including Malaysia. So, so Vietnam was done in 2003 during SARS. Mm-hmm. So virtually, I was traveling to Vietnam in a plane that's less than five people. Yeah, so nobody's going. And in Cambodia, we started during the Great Financial Crisis in 2009. So, needless to say, we have a lot of experience starting business or expanding business during the time that most people think that is not ideal.
Right.
Right, but to us, actually, those are the most ideal because you have less competition in everything, in securing talented people, in securing the right locations. So, fast forward to 2020 in March, when the pandemic hit, we are all stuck at home. I think it was the worst situation that the F&B industry has ever seen. Because people like to say that F&B is more resilient, like healthcare.
Yeah.
We're very resilient and recession-proof. That's the word they like to use. Yeah. But this time, everybody is not allowed to go out.
What was the strategy like expanding and opening all these new outlets in Malaysia once you had Cambodia and Vietnam settled?
All right. The market perceived our stores as one that service consumer. Actually, that's not how quite we started. The stores has always been, we had three stores,
mm-hmm.
yeah, before the pandemic. The business model has always been to service the small and medium operators plus consumer.
Right.
Because not only are the consumers not able to access at an affordable price, neither do the small and medium operators that have to pay higher prices going to the traditional market. So during the pandemic, we thought that, okay, now consumers have to stay at home. Our F&B industry is pretty much locked down,
right,
for the next 18 months. And we say, okay, we have goods. Why don't we service Malaysians? Why don't we provide a comfort, the basic comfort of having family meals at home,
right,
lunch and dinner? And now, because of lockdown, they do it more frequently. So hence, we open the stores, servicing the consumer. But at the back of our mind, it has always been a focus on the B2B. And the mainnet, since the opening of last year, September, we have been shifting our focus more towards the small and medium operators. And now we are reached much room during the pandemic, really. If you go everywhere during the pandemic, you see a lot of food stalls,
right?
You see pilots becoming chefs and stuff like that. So we are servicing these people. So we like to serve the people that are underserved. Yeah.
So you're pivoting more from B2B to a B2C model. Is that accurate to say?
It's not so much. It's during different times, you have to focus on different segments. So basically right now, we are not pretty much B2C because B2C means we are supplying to other retailers that will supply to the market. Yeah. On the consumer part, we're pretty much a D2C. We are direct to consumer.
Right.
So that is still our focus. But right now, because F&B is coming back very, very strongly, so we are spending a lot of efforts to try to service all these food stalls, food trucks, all these smaller guys, yeah, in the F&B.
And your expansion is not stopping there. I see that there's 100 million ringgit that's being invested. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Okay, so on an overall basis, our business is pretty much still focused on the B2B side.
Right.
F&B industry is our bread and butter. It will be our bread and butter in the years to come. So right now, our investment is going into, we look at the whole retail F&B setup, as well as all everything we are doing as an investment on infrastructure. How do we get the products to the consumer, whether it's B2C or B2B, in the shortest period at the most affordable prices, right? So our plan is to enter a few more Southeast Asia countries. In fact, we were supposed to enter a Southeast Asia country before the pandemic. Actually, the country was Myanmar. Mm-hmm. And now that, it's quite a turmoil over there.
Right.
So we pretty much put that on the back burner for the time being. But we're looking at one or two other countries right now. We will be investing via merger acquisitions in several countries. And then, at the same time, we are building more infrastructure in Cambodia as well as Malaysia.
What are those two additional countries you're looking at?
Right now, all I can disclose, they are in Southeast Asia.
In Southeast
Asia. Right? Yeah. So, coming back to the infrastructure part, right now in Malaysia, we are actually looking at, developing more distribution center to service our outlets, to service the people. And also in Cambodia right now, actually, we already own the most sophisticated cold chain warehouse in Cambodia. And right now, we are actually doubling that expansion because the business is growing. We're very proud that we actually opened our first F&B store in Cambodia last month. So making us, one of the few, if not the only Malaysian grocer that's actually international. And two more stores coming up in the next 2 months, okay?
Right. Now, I'm also curious about the growth plan that you brought up just now, the one that was announced in 2002. What has that achieved? I know it's 5,000% growth in sales. What is it that you guys have learned? Does anything need tweaking? Is there going to be a new growth plan on the horizon?
Yeah, actually, the new growth plans that came across was during the pandemic was really opening the stores to deliver. But our mission has always been the same, right? Our mission is actually called Mission Food Equality, right? What is Mission Food Equality? To nourish the world by providing good products at affordable prices. So with this retail outlet, we are able to reach places that typically we cannot reach, right? Let me explain a bit, right? If you look at it, we have a huge warehouse, right? Most food distributors have a huge warehouse.
Right.
It takes us at least 1.5 days to pick a goods from a huge warehouse.
Right.
But at the store, it just takes us 1 hour to deliver to pack up the goods for the customer to pick it up, right? So that is our strategy. But we are not, we are following our strategy that has been devised since 2002 that is continue to expand regionally. We feel very proud to be a Malaysian company, right? I have a new staff that just joined us like 2 weeks ago. She came in and she said, wow, I'm having a culture shock. I said, why are you having a culture shock? I have never seen a more Malaysian company, where there is so multiracial, right? So, we're going to continue to grow in Southeast Asia using Malaysian talents. We are very proud. We want to put a Malaysian flag. We want to make Malaysians proud. We want to prove that Malaysian company can compete just like all the largest company that we have in Malaysia. Yeah.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning is Gareth Tan, the Managing Director of F&B. In a little while, we'll talk about whether there is good money to be made in frozen foods or is this industry cooling down. I'm Keith Kam. This is BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
This is The Breakfast Grill. I'm Keith Kam. This morning, we're talking to Gareth Tan, the Managing Director of F&B, a food distributor that has been around for 3 generations. Now, Gareth, I want to bring you back to a pledge that you guys made, and that is to help local traders and customers cope with rising food costs. How is that possible, seeing as inflation looks almost out of control in a lot of places?
The only way we can do this is by long-term wise, is to have a large volume.
Right.
And that's why we are actually expanding regionally. The more countries we have, the more distribution we have, the more bargaining power we have with our suppliers. So right now with three country purchases, we are able to lower our costs. We are able to bring down shipping costs. And hopefully with our new infrastructure in place, where the transportation cost between the consumer and ourselves is low, we are able to lower the transportation cost and the logistic cost.
Most of your items are also imported, right? How do you cope with the ringgit that is weakening now?
Right. This is over the years, you know, we work with our bankers. So we take position on the currency. We hedge our currency. That's obviously the most standard way of dealing with the problem. But having said that, a dynamic that people do not understand that while ringgit is actually depreciating, so are the rest of the currency. So let's say if I buy from Australia, Australian dollar has depreciated tremendously against the US dollar, which help elevate. So it's pretty much neutralized in one way or another, you know, because the Aussie dollar is becoming cheaper against the dollar. So the selling price is becoming cheaper, but then our import cost is higher because of the currency. So there's some neutralizing factor in between of the currency, yeah?
But what's perplexing to me is that I've been in conversation with restaurant owners, cafe owners,
right.
And since the start of this year, many of them have received at least two price increases from their suppliers.
Right.
How is it that FanB is still able to not pass these costs down to its customers?
I wouldn't say, you know, we are not passing the costs down to the consumer, but because of the volume that we are doing and because we are in this for a long term, Keith. I mean, you know, inflation in our history book is pretty much a cycle, you know.
Right.
Right. Myself, I've been in the industry for 20 years. I've seen this cycle at least three times, yeah. The first time I saw it was in 2008. The second time was in 2015. And now I'm seeing it again in 2022, you know. And just like everything else, I mean, including cars, etc., where prices always pick up and then there's more production. So I guess we just have to ride this out and try to be as competitive as possible while we're expanding our business.
So you don't see any chance of necessity to pass these costs down to customers?
We have increased our price throughout the year, but we always try to minimize this, right, the best we can.
Let's talk about the past 2.5 years. COVID-19 really did a number on all of us. And looking at your financials, the latest that I have access to is the 2020 financial year. Revenues are slightly more than double 2019's, but you guys swung back into the red after being profitable the previous year. What happened there?
This is partly because of the expansion. We consider this as an investment, like all new businesses. Like I mentioned earlier, this is an infrastructure that we are building. And, you know, infrastructure costs money. You know, depreciation is involved. Financial cost is involved. But we're really looking into this from a long-term perspective, how we're going to help lower down the prices and keep them affordable. That maintains our number one mission.
So you're looking to be profitable, back to profitability in the coming financial year? Or,
yeah, actually, we are profitable, certain stores. Obviously, we have grown from 3 stores to quite a number of stores. So you know, in due time, the rest of our stores, we are pretty confident that, you know, they will post a profit. But we are already profitable in quite a lot of our stores, actually.
Your current liabilities are also increasing as well. This tells me that FanB could be doing more and more business. However, when that sort of thing happens, creditor terms would be lengthening. How do you prepare for this?
Yeah, you mean credit terms to our customers?
Yeah.
Actually, you know, for the stores, we don't really give out credit to the small and medium operators or the consumer.
Okay.
In fact, I would like to bring this as an extra service that we are giving. We have actually credit card, right? So for any of the small and medium operators that come to our store, and able to procure at affordable prices, they can use the credit card.
So it's like your 555.
Yeah, so you get your automatic 30 days as long as you pay on time, interest-free credit. At the same time, we are also in the talks with quite a few financial institutions right? Looking at how we can provide more facilities, more credit facilities, backed up by the banks or backed up by the financial institutions to the consumers.
What's FanBee's approach like towards e-commerce and an omni-channel approach to serving right. your clients?
Right. Actually, during the pandemic, we saw e-commerce being on the forefront. Mm-hmm. Business went up a lot. We did partner with a lot of all these online stores. We run an online store ourselves. But after the pandemic, what we're seeing right now is that people still prefer to go to the store to buy. So if you look at the history of grocery, if that's the right term for it, right? Nobody has cracked it yet. I mean, you talk about Amazon, you talk about people like Alibaba, nobody has managed to crack the code yet, right? As far as we remember, pre-pandemic, O2O was the way to go. Mm-hmm. And right now we are seeing it's the same O2O. That is why we are continuing to invest in our FanBee stores, right? Because at the end of the day, what we are doing, Keith, is really to build the last mile in cold chain, which is extremely difficult, actually.
What exactly are you in investing in terms of technology? Are you reaching out to customers via e-commerce, working with companies like Shopee and Lazada and yep. all these people to...
Yep. We are actually present in most of the major platforms.
Yep.
We have our website, which is www.fanbee.com, where we service directly to consumer. And we are continuing to, like you said, we are continuing to invest in the stores because that's how we're going to fulfill the orders. At the same time, we are spending a lot of, we are actually investing in a lot of marketing for our online business via digital platforms and digital media.
Now that the lockdowns are over, do you see this still panning out? Is it paying off as we go along, or are customers still preferring to be at your physical establishments?
People still prefer to come into the stores right now. But again, we view, like all our part of our business, we view this as a long-term business. Yeah. So, we're going to continue to invest in the online. And we believe that eventually, that could be a significant part of the business.
I think you agree with me that it really looks like the food distribution industry is seeing a surging demand because, you see new eateries, new cafes opening up all over the country, rapid urbanization, and the demand is not just domestic. I think it's occurring in other countries as well. How is FanBee looking to tap into this potential businesses that you could go into?
Yeah, look, again, food has always been a basic necessity.
Yeah.
Right. And the frozen food industry certainly did take off during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Right. And we believe that it's going to continue to take off and continue to increase. All right. Just to give you a perspective, we talk about the food service industry in Malaysia, right? It is a $10 billion US industry.
It is, yeah.
And we talk about the grocery market is about 50 billion ringgit. So every year we're growing about 7%. Of course, COVID for the food service and COVID actually stopped that, but now it's resuming. So we expect consumer to continue to embrace imported food products, especially frozen food, because they are so used to it now and they are more educated about it.
In terms of the food offerings you have, it's not just frozen meats and dairy anymore. I see that I've been to a couple of your stores and they are beginning to look more and more like your regular supermarkets. So,
yep.
Which is why I was suggesting that it could be more of a... you could be wanting to go into competition with your Jaya Grocers and your Bigs. Is that where you are heading eventually?
Actually, that has never been our intention, right? Our business model has always been we need to... We look at business as a science, mm-hmm. not an art, right? In science, what do? In science, you experiment. Right, so we listen to the feedback of consumer, right? We want to provide better service. We want our consumer not to go into too many stores. So we explore and we experimented with putting more basic goods in our stores so that to make our consumer life easier. All right, so we will continue to experiment with new products, just like every retailer, Some work, some may not work. But to us, not experimenting, not trying to make our customers' life easier is not something that we want to pursue. Yeah.
So an acquisition of a smaller player is not on the cards for you guys?
Right now, I wouldn't totally discount that, but our focus is pretty much still our B2B business.
Mm-hmm.
Because in order for us to establish a base in any region or country, or let's say Borneo, we need to get the top of the pyramid sorted out, which is the distribution, the ability to import the products in, right? So that's where we are focusing on potentially any acquisitions.
You must be attracting quite a lot of interest from private equities as well, right?
We know people. I mean, not only now. I mean, since 20 years ago, you know, I've always met a lot of people from the financial field, and they've been very good to us. We continue to keep in touch, and that's what it is.
And finally, after 60 years, what are your thoughts on going public? How would that look like?
Just like every company, right? Or every businessman, definitely the thought of entertaining, the thought of going public has crossed the mind. I think, we will continue to focus on our expansion trail. We want to be in more countries. We want to, make Malaysia proud, and we want to continue our mission on bringing down and making the food products affordable to everyone in the region. I think that's where we are focusing right now, Keith.
And Gareth, we wish you all the best in what's to come for FanB. This has been The Breakfast Grill, and we were speaking to Gareth Tan, the Managing Director of FanB. I'm Keith Kam. This is BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, where unlimited potential begins.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.